Ladies and gentlemen, hello, I'm Henry Winter. I would like to introduce to discuss the SoccerX transfer review. First of all, Esteve Calzada from Primetime Sports, formerly of Barcelona, wrote a very famous book, Show Me the Money, which I think might be the theme for today. Esteve, please. If I can now introduce a distinguished former Spanish international, Gaizka Mendieta. And similarly distinguished, former French international, Louis Sahar. Esteve, if you'd like to lead us with the SoccerX transfer review, please.
Sure. Hello? Does this work? Yeah. So good afternoon. Nice to see everyone, most of people that we met in previous years again here. I keep on trying not to make the after lunch session with so many numbers, but I'm not successful. So I'll try to keep you guys entertained. Unfortunately, when you see these big names from the game, both from the pitch and also from the media, you may expect very funny or exciting things about football, videos, etc., anecdotes, but that's not going to be the case. I'm sorry about that. I'm just going to be around showing you plenty of numbers. Anyway, thanks for being here. We're presenting football, the transfer review, SoccerX transfer review. We're launching it live as we speak. And what I'll do is to take you through some of the main conclusions of the report. The report is very long, and obviously we're not going to cover all the details in here, but I think it's going to be a good opportunity to go through the big numbers, some of the insight information that the report includes, so that we can then open up a conversation with the panel here, and then, of course, go back to you guys and take questions from you. So, quickly, just a reminder in terms of how the report works, because obviously, if you look at the media, you never come up with the exact same numbers in terms of the amounts of the transfers, right? So we have our own methodology. We've been doing the report since 2009, and it's important to explain how we come up with the numbers. So some of the key things to take into account is, first, when we report the transfers, we only take into account fixed amounts, so no bonuses, just the fixed amounts in the agreements. And obviously, we're not aware, or we do not take into consideration if there's any third-party entities involved in the deals. So we assume that the players are bought 100% by a club and sold 100% by a club, in terms of more or less the key things for us to take into account. Finally, because also there's been some deviation with the numbers, we account for a transfer when there's an obligation to purchase. So the typical agreement, which includes loan plus obligation to purchase, we consider it a sale at the time of that agreement. So things like, for instance, Negredo, which is a high-profile deal between Valencia and Manchester City, we recorded it last season, because last season it was agreed that there was an obligation to purchase the player by Valencia. Okay, so let's just go quickly into the numbers. Briefly, in terms of what background we have had in this transfer window, I would say that the biggest headline, besides the fact that we all know that the Premier League invested more than 1 billion again, record high, strongest competition in football, I think some of the facts for us to take into account, and one of the biggest ones, and I think this is coming up from the financial fair play, is the fact that players trading has become standard practice across the board. And I mean as the standard practice, including the top teams. In the past, we would be used to see the smaller teams or teams used to produce good players, such as Porto in Portugal, such as Atletico in Spain, such as Southampton here in the UK. But now, more and more, because of the need to generate income to finance other acquisitions, every top club will show up in the lists of highest sales. So that's something which is important. It has become a standard practice. Then this season we saw another specific factor, which was the fact that there were plenty of important teams that had a need to renew the squad. And that definitely showed up in the numbers, not just those from the UK, but also the ones, for instance, in Italy. And then we've got other factors. Of course, we are aware about the lucrative TV rights deals. This year we have new TV rights deals in Spain, which will mean increased revenues for Spanish clubs. But also we are 1 year from the biggest deals in the UK history. So all in all, affected this market and provoked the numbers that we will just review in a second. So combined investment... Sorry. Excuse me. I was just using mine instead of the other one. So here we go. So combined investment in the top five European leagues was almost 3 billion euros. This is yet another record high in history, and this is up 32% versus last year. I'm not going to spend too much time on these numbers. By the way, the report is ready to be downloaded either on primetimesport.com website or on soccerx.com. So I'm not just the biggest number that all of you guys have seen in the media, I'm not going to spend too much time. Another important factor, again, Premier League, the strongest competition, 1.2 billion euros in investment, plus 14% versus last year. But all the top five European leagues are up versus last season, and except Spain, all of them hit record high figures in terms of investment. Another interesting piece of information which we see year after year is the fact that because of the more democratic distribution of the TV rights income, the Premier League stays as the most as the least polarized league. So the top four teams in the UK have accounted for only 46% of the total expenditure, which compares with 83% in Spain. In France. In Spain, where we were used to see Barcelona and Madrid at the top, for the first time in history, neither Barcelona nor Real Madrid are among the top two teams that invested most in Spain. So that's because Atletico and Valencia were much more active in this respect. Okay. Another thing that we wanted to have a look this year is just a replica of the success of the Premier League into the second division leagues. And what we have seen, you'll see for those that are familiar with the report, we came up with fresh content this season, and you will see new content sticker on those slides that we didn't have in the past. So here yet we see again the strength of the competition of the English market, because the Championship spent 137 million euros this summer, which is much more than all the other second division leagues together, which is another proof of the strength of this market. Player sales are also very important, and we'll have a quick look at the net investment, which is at the end of the day what we have to take into account. But still, except for Spain, every single top European league has hit record high figures in terms of player sales. 573 million in the UK, almost 500 million in Serie A, Bundesliga 470 million. Strong activity both in the acquisition but also on the player sales. And as a result, when we look at the net investment, the difference between the Premier League and all the other leagues is even bigger, because the net investment in the Premier League was around 600 million euros, which is five times more the runners-up, which is Spanish. Sorry. Excuse me, I'm not... Okay. Sorry, it was... Perfect. No, I was just saying about the net spending, where you can see an even bigger difference between the Premier League and all the other leagues. In terms of the most active teams, we are aware that Manchester City spent 200 million euros, which is by far the biggest investment of the season. It's not the biggest in football history. Real Madrid spent more some years ago, as we will see later. And then Manchester United was also very active. Last year invested almost 200 million also, and this year also 140 million. So very, very much dominated by Manchester team. Another thing which is interesting to analyze, what we did here is we took into consideration the highest investment in history in its summer transfer window. And we tried to see whether investing heavily resulted in immediate results on the pitch, right? So what we can see here, and there's plenty of numbers here, but what we can see is that investing heavily does not translate immediately into pitch results. So out of 10 top investments over the last years, only 5 times the team that invested the most managed to win either the Premier League, the domestic league, or the Champions League, which is interesting. Then finally, in terms of this section, sorry, because it's not working all the time. Here we go. As I was mentioning, in terms of a more detailed analysis in each of the leagues, we can see that Atletico and Valencia were ahead of Real Madrid and Barcelona in Spain. And again, in terms of news, what we can see is that the top Italian teams are back, especially the Milan teams. They all conducted significant team renovations, of course, Juventus, but also now Inter Milan and AC Milan. So all in all, a very busy activity in this market. Another interesting piece of information is that reflects the difference between the Premier League and all the other leagues, is the amounts invested by the promoted teams. In England, the most active promoted team was Watford, that invested 47 million euros in new players. And that is much more than all the other promoted teams together in all the other leagues, which is, again, one more proof of the strength of this competition and of the importance of the TV rights income when a team manages to make it to the Premier League. And then finally, in terms of accumulating the expenditure, or how much was spent over the years since we produced the report over the last 7 years, I would say that Real Madrid and Manchester City, as you can see from the numbers, have been by far the most active teams in the marketplace. In terms of sales, Monaco has been by far the most active team in terms of player sales, and they have collected a massive 160 million euros in sales this summer. This is the biggest amount in football history collected by any single team in a transfer window. It's a lot of money. They also invested heavily, but this is an important change. Also, it's interesting to see Atletico both in the topping both the investment and also the sales rankings, and some other teams, including Inter Milan, who has been very, very active also this summer. The most expensive players of the summer are taught by Kevin De Bruyne signing by Manchester City, followed by Di Maria signing by PSG, and then Sterling also by Manchester City. If we were to look at the most expensive players of last summer, and we were to say those that played regularly would be considered like profitable signings, we could call Alexis Sanchez from Arsenal the most profitable signing from last year, because it played 86% of the minutes. On the other side, 3 of the Manchester United players were not as profitable because they did not play regularly, although Shaw was more the result of an injury. And if we were to look at the historical top 10 of most expensive signings, what we see this year is that De Bruyne signing by Manchester City joins the top 10 in history. For the first time, Manchester City puts a player in this ranking and becomes the fifth most expensive signing in football history. So, just a final section before we open to the panels, more details about the Premier League and some interesting information that we have managed to collect. The growth of the Premier League, as we were mentioning, it's consistent, and it's been already 5 years of growth in the league. And in terms of the ranking of the teams, I would say that the biggest news is the absence of Arsenal in the top positions. As you know, they only signed Peter Cech, and they actually were not any active, neither selling nor buying players, because their biggest profile sell was selling Podolski to Galatasaray this summer. But then, as a difference or as new content for this season, we wanted to, when we see this proliferation of signings in the Premier League, we wanted to, we wanted to have a look at whether these signings are successful or not, because there is a feeling that there's plenty of signings that arrive and leave, probably as a result of having a lot of disposable income to sign players. It could, at least in principle, it could look like there's no so much analysis when deciding signing a player, or maybe more risk-taking when it comes to signing a player. And we came up with this very interesting statistic. What we did, we took the signings of the Premier League over the last 3 years that cost more than 10 million euros. And that's a total of 81 players, okay? So out of these 81 players, 34 played less than 50% of the minutes over the last 3 years, which means that if we spend more than 10 million euros for a player, except if it's a bench goalkeeper, it's an amount that's normally meant to be for a player that plays regularly, right? So this number of players, 34, cost 650 million euros. So we could say that 650 million euros were spent on players that did not succeed, when they are on expensive players that did not succeed in their teams. And out of those players, an amount of 411 million euros already left the club that signed them. So this is also food for thought and for us to discuss later on how can you do to be more successful when you try to bring new players. This compares to 145 million euros in La Liga. Players signed over the last 3 years of more than 10 million that did not play at least 50% of the minutes, just so that you have some perspective. In terms of who those players were and where was that money coming from, 160 million euros from Manchester United signings and 138 million from Tottenham signings. All in all, we've seen teams like Tottenham selling high profile players like Bale, or Liverpool selling Luis Suarez and then having lots of money and need to renovate the team. So what we've seen in recent years is that in many cases, we came up with players that could not be considered successful signings. So the likes of Di Maria, Shaw, Fellaini, Kagawa, Ben Davies, Soldado, Paulinho, many of these players did not manage to stay in their clubs. So this is something which is for us to talk about later. In terms of where is the Premier League money going, who is the number one client? The number one client is obviously the domestic competition. 276 million euros were spent domestically among Premier League clubs. We should add 85 million that went to Championship clubs in the Football League. But then in terms of overseas leagues, the most important supplier of players for the Premier League was the Bundesliga, who supplied 80% of the expenditure, followed by League One, which supplied for 15% of the total. Another interesting piece of information here is the average cost of a domestic player. As you know, there's new regulation in the UK which is forcing the clubs to have at least 8 homegrown players in the squad, meaning players that have spent at least 3 years in an English club when they were under 21. What we've seen this year, and obviously the most known case is the case of Raheem Sterling signing by Manchester City, but what we have seen is that the English player became an expensive currency because there's a local domestic need to have these players on board and many other signings that were about to happen and never happened, such as Berahino, such as Stones. Every single English good player, especially if it's in the national team, has become very expensive and in average cost 6.7 million euros, which is which is up from 4 million last year, which is a significant amount, of course. Okay, in terms of player sales, another interesting piece of information is seeing Manchester United at the top of selling clubs. Of course, this is highly influenced by the sale of Angel Di Maria to PSG, but it's interesting, as I was mentioning before, to see big clubs selling big money, like Liverpool, selling for 92 million last summer, 84 million this summer. Very, very intensive activity by the top clubs. Even Southampton last year sold for 120 million, was the number one team in terms of money collected from player sales. Okay, we are approaching the latest slides, the last slides in the presentation. Where is the Premier League sourcing players from? 276 million, 43% of total domestically, 50% if we take into account the Football League. But then the most important supplier the most important client for the Premier League is the League One from France, which accounted for 50% of the total sales by the Premier League clubs. Just a couple of interesting slides to finish my presentation in terms of the squad composition and is also for us to comment about. English Premier League still stands as the league having the highest percentage of foreign players. Actually, 68% of the players in the squad are not English, which compares to 42% in La Liga. Another interesting information is the number of homegrown players in the squad. Last year, we were showing Manchester United at the top. This year, United is taken over by Tottenham, having six players that have been produced in their academy. And then another interesting piece of information to conclude is the stability of the teams, which is the average time that players have stayed in a specific team. And here we see Everton as the team having the most stable squad. In average, players in the team have stayed for a nice 3.6 years, which is a nice proof of stability. So this is pretty much the summary of the numbers that you can find in the SoccerX Transfer Review by Primetime Sport. In terms of summarizing what we have seen, again, the Premier League being so strong will continue to be like this. It shouldn't change, especially next year. The new TV rights contract, even more lucrative, come into force, which means that I would expect the Premier League to continue to invest heavily. But then, more importantly, the other The other change that we are seeing in the marketplace, as I was mentioning at the beginning, is the fact that any top team got used to sell their best players. And that's part of this, a standard practice in the industry. We've seen it heavily, for instance, by Chelsea. And I would expect this to continue in the future, because at the end of the day, this is the way you can finance the new player acquisitions, and also you can deliver with the financial fair play regulations. Thank you very much, and we can have a conversation panel right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Esteve. Looking at your slides and all the figures and the headlines that's come out of it, what is the perception abroad? You live in Barcelona. What is the perception abroad about the logic and the sanity or insanity of Premier League spending?
The perception is like it's like a big monster. The president of La Liga, Javier Tebas, who is around, call it like the NBA of football, right? So there's an understanding, or there's an agreement that there's no way to compete with them, and I would say that what teams are trying to do is take advantage of that in terms of trying to put their players for sale. No?
I mean, Louis, we're obviously in Manchester, a club you know well, Manchester United, a lot of focus on Martial. You've obviously seen him as a player. Can you correlate the potential of the player to the amount of money that's been invested by Manchester United?
Yeah, I would say that it's a bit hard to comment on that. I know the actual power of the player, you know, the quality as a footballer. The potential is something that you can judge and try to have a figure, you know. And now the figures is a bit difficult because it come with a lot of aspect that we don't understand. Maybe a sponsor, maybe a market from Asia or whatever, that things that has been moving from years to years. And it's for sure that if you look at it as a player, you look and say, oh, hang on a minute. Maybe 10 years ago, it was maybe 20, and now it come to increase very, very fast. So it increased the polemics and all that around that player, and it's nothing to do with him. As it's a market, and Manchester United have the funds, have the possibility of buying some players, and when you look at such players, it's no many around. So you're starting to look at, even for the defenders, it was the same. Look at a good defender who's got like the structure to help your side to get that confidence back. You have to look around and you have to pay 25 or 30 now. So it is that motion where maybe players are not specialized anymore. You know, it's really hard to find straight away your target, you know, in terms of a transfer. So that's why the prices go up.
L'Equipe's front page headline was plus cher de Zidane, more expensive than Zidane. I mean, but as a footballer, what is his potential? What do you see in him as his strengths? Is he best out wide? Can he play through the middle? Is he a number nine?
It could be easily compared to a Thierry Henry. I don't want to put that pressure on him because it's my club, you know. I want him to perform. Well, I'm sure it's a talent. He got speed, he got power, he got that youth in him where you know that he can destroy a defense very, you know, in the speed of a second, because it's very unpredictable. And I think Manchester was looking for something like this. You need speed, you need that kind of a player capable of doing extraordinary things. What I see is maybe he's lacking the decision making around the box, you know, being a proper striker. And that's the difficulty of strikers around now. It's kind of like getting harder to find a Van Nistelrooy or a Trezeguet or those kind of striker who you can rely on them every week, because they are very focused on one or two quality they have, you know, to score goals. And now maybe that's a new type of players that you see. They can do a lot of tricks and, you know, can play on the side and be nice to look. But do they do the job? That's the thing that we look into to players, and I think that's what we tend to forget sometimes.
the other big headline that came out of Old Trafford on transfer deadline day, obviously, was De Gea not moving. Gaiska, you know him. Is he the type of professional who will dedicate himself, who will knuckle down, who will get into training, he'll work out his relationship with Van Gaal and be an outstanding goalkeeper for Manchester United for the rest of the season?
Definitely, and he will. And both know they have no option. Certainly, it was a situation that no one wanted. I don't think we'll ever know what really happened in those papers, whether we were late, who put them late or not. But I think it's unfair, obviously, on the players, which is the one has been more damaged in the whole situation. It's both one thinking that he was going to be the goalkeeper, obviously with the shadow of De Gea constantly there, and thinking that he was coming to the club. So his time at Madrid for Keylor Navas was timed. And De Gea the same, thinking season already started, thinking of going to Madrid, his family, everyone looking forward to that, and not happening. And all of a sudden you see two players, two families, the whole sort of around the player changing their minds. As a professional, you only got one choice, which is move forward. And both, especially De Gea, will do. He knows his place is be number one of Manchester United. And I think Van Gaal knows as well, and I'm sure they have a lot of conversations about it. He will be in a trust him. I think in that Van Gaal is very good in terms of confidence and talking to the players. But it's whether mentally how you take those new games, new training sessions, thinking that you kind of nearly left and all of a sudden you didn't. No doubt about the professionalism of De Gea, no doubt. And I'm sure he'll be the number one goalkeeper for Man U this season.
And for Spain going into the Euros, because obviously that's one of his targets.
It will be as well. It's a matter of time. Obviously, Valdés seemed to be one supplier or being after Casillas. But football changed very quickly. You never know what's around the corner. And that's what happened to Valdés. Obviously, De Gea now is, for me, the second goalkeeper in terms of replacing Casillas on goal. Casillas is going to Porto. It seems like he's reborn, get the enthusiasm again, being happy and enjoying his game again. And he's number one. He played very well the other day. Obviously, Del Bosque trusts Casillas above any other goalkeeper. But De Gea is the next one on the list at the moment.
You mentioned the family, the pressure on the family. Obviously, De Gea's got a very high-profile girlfriend in Madrid. What is it like being in the middle of a transfer? Do you talk to your partner? Do you think about the kids, you know, where they go to school? Or is it purely about the football and the money and everything that affects you as an individual?
I suppose it depends on the personality of each player. But this is a process. It's not something that it happens overnight. And you just think about, oh, we're moving tomorrow to a different city from Manchester to Madrid. Obviously, they made the decision to move to Madrid a long time ago, and I'm sure they tried to put all in place to make it happen as quick as possible. But he obviously take all those things in consideration. For him, going back to Spain, his family as well, his parents were looking forward to go back to Madrid. That doesn't mean they're not happy in Manchester, but obviously, being a Spanish, always you more likely or more happy to be back to your home ground. But it's all the situations. Mainly should be football. And I think in his head, obviously, it was football. Go to Madrid is one of the, you know, as a football player, go to the biggest clubs in Europe is the best thing you could do.
Louis, just coming back to Martial, if you had one piece of advice for him going into Manchester United, what would it be? Would it be learn the language? Obviously, that wasn't an issue for you, but would it be appreciate the size of the club?
I think there is many things to say to him, because it's such a big club, you know, the pressure. You know, he has to maybe close his ears and just get focused, make sure that he enjoy being part of such a great club. The focus that it's very important for him is to score goals and perform on the field. So getting the advice from Wayne Rooney, Bastian, you know, those kind of players who got experience, and I think they're going to do that because they know that it can provide such a good result, you know. So it is a matter of, like, make sure that he's focused on really the important stuff, you know, making sure, like, he's giving 100%. And as a player, when you are a foreigner, you come from France and you don't know the culture and all that, it's always helping if you speak the language, that's for sure. That's something I would advise. And make sure that he go ask those players, as I said, to make sure he's got as much information as possible. Yeah.
Esteve, this has really been the first transfer window since the sort of the change to FFP, basically looks like the ending of it. Do you see more and more spending going on in future transfer windows, particularly on the back of the Premier League increased broadcasting contract?
I think so. The Premier League, because of the new TV rights coming into force, but also La Liga, because of increased, not big amounts, but gradually the smaller teams will be in a capacity to start buying players. Because for some small teams, the TV rights will go from 15 to 25 million euros. So that's a lot of money. Plus the fact that there will continue to be player sales. So I would expect the transfer market to be very active and probably another record high next summer.
With so much being spent, are we seeing a change in the Premier League of actually the recruitment structure? So in the old days, it would be the manager would decide, I want this player, and then someone at the club would go out and get them. Whereas now you look at Liverpool, you look at Chelsea, there seems to be sort of almost more of a sort of continental approach of the responsibility for recruitment being spread around. It's not purely the responsibility of the manager.
I think that's the way it should be. And in Spain, for instance, there was a bit of surprise when looking at Manchester United. There doesn't seem to be the position of a football director. So it's something that it's the manager himself alongside with the CEO. I like, and I think it's proven that it's good in terms of the results and also in terms of giving continuity to the team, that there is a football director that takes care of the building of the squad going forward, whereas obviously the manager has to take care of the daily operation and the lineups. And then I remember well when I was in Barcelona, just before, well, actually, my first year in Barcelona was still with Van Gaal. And by then there was not a proper football director either. So he started to suggest the club to bring many, many Dutch players. So there was up to, I think, 6 or 7 Dutch players in the team. But then he left and left players that were his own request to the club. So that's something that you definitely don't want. And I think that going forward, we will see every single team having the position of a football director. Definitely.
You know Van Gaal. When you see the recruitment that he's done at Manchester United, does it surprise you? Can you see a theme there?
The only thing, I'm not an ex-footballer myself, so I cannot comment much technically. The only thing I can say that surprised me in terms of numbers, I like a lot to look at the numbers. The surprise for me was the valuation of Martial. So the week before, there was rumors in the press that maybe Barcelona would take him for around 20 million. That was the number around. Actually, we published our SoccerX under 21 top 20 list. We did it together, Primetime Sports and SoccerX. And Martial was in the list, and we valued him based on pure statistics and valuation analysis. We valued him at 16. Million euros.
1.6.
Yeah. Okay. So that means that we're either very bad making valuations, or on the other side, the market is kind of crazy.
But do you think there is this madness on the final day of the transfer window, and that a player like him is almost, as you say, he's gone for 3 times what you valued him to be on his statistics, that it's almost a panic buy?
I'm not sure. On paper, I would say it's a very expensive signing for a very young player. But over time, we'll see. It will depend on how good or how bad he is. We've seen 650 million euros in players that were not successful. Ronaldo, when was signed by Real Madrid, everyone was just shocked with the amount. And then every fan that you would ask about the cost would say it would have been cheap, right?
You talk about the sort of move towards technical directors and directors of football almost orchestrating the transfer policy. How does that leave an individual like Ed Woodward at Manchester United, whose background is a fantastic financial man doing commercial deals, but he's now sort of stepped into the shark pool of player recruitment and dealing with agents and clubs. Is it difficult for someone like him to step into that world?
Well, I don't know him. I don't know him personally, actually, and I don't know about his capabilities, and it's not fair for me to comment on that. What it seems to be the case is the fact that he's told about players that he should bring to the team, and then his job is try to negotiate the best deal possible. That's what I would say. But again, I still miss the fact that he can consult things with a football director that is not just that. I mean, it's not an easy position, football director. You need to have someone that combines both negotiation skills with football knowledge, and that's not easy. So in this case, probably you have a very strong man in negotiation skills. On the other side, you have a very strong man in terms of football. Probably you need someone in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what was Van Gaal like to deal with?
Well, I like Van Gaal very much. I mean, he's direct. He's grumpy sometimes, but I like him. He's honest. He's straightforward. And by then, I was the CMO when he was at the club, and for me, it was excellent because one of the things, my only relationship with the team would be in either commercial tours or player appearances for sponsors, and I would go to him, we would agree the player that would appear, and he would get them there with no problem. So he would understand that, and for me, it worked very well.
Gajka, one of the obvious headline figures that came out of Esteves' report was 32% homegrown starting regularly in the Premier League compared to 58% in Spain. We see the success of Spain, 3 successive tournaments. You see England done really nothing internationally since 1966, 50th anniversary next year. Do you see that sort of comparison that, in a way, the English have got to look at producing more homegrown players if we are going to compete internationally?
I think you should. I mean, figures in this case, I think they're quite relevant. And the fact that teams don't promote the grassroots in the way they should, and the teams don't have enough local players to produce or to make them for the national team. That's the result you get. And if you look at Spain, I mean, it's always difficult to compare. For us, Spanish, it's always been difficult to leave Spain because we're so attached to our culture. Now, obviously, money is getting better, so we don't need to look any farther to make your career better. For English, it was at one point very similar. English players won't want to leave England because obviously the money was good and the league was strong. But it comes to a time where the players are coming through and not good enough. You should look how things are being done and why there's not so many players coming through the young ranks and making it to the first team. It's something that missing that link between maybe under 18 and the 21s where England is successful. Mm. But when it comes that step to professionalism, it is not. So there's something that needs to be addressed, that needs to be done in a way to get professional players at the top level to be able to compete as a national team in European Championship or World Cups.
If you compared the hunger levels of young English players to young Spanish players, how would they compare?
Well, from my experience, I think it's the education where we get as a younger players. I used to be midfielder, then I play as a right back, left back, I play the centre half, play playmaker. So I would know how to play in every single position, either if it was mine or not. I didn't find that when I came to England. The tactical sort of side of the football, the understanding of the game, the timing, the reading of the position, whatever is doing someone else, how it affects me. That's something players didn't know. So it's something that needs to be changed. Also, one, I think, important thing is the competitiveness that it doesn't exist in England for maybe players between 16 and 20 something. It's the reserve league, which is great for professionals when they have to come back from injuries. But I don't think it gives the level of competitive that you need at that age and the minutes to play regularly every week in, week out and compete at that level against experienced players. Yeah, you play against another players of your age, but that doesn't give you that edge to become an excellent player, like Holland have done for years. How many 18, 17-year-old players have we seen in the best clubs in Europe?
So do you like the idea of B teams?
I like the idea, yeah, because I think basically it makes players better. Mm-hmm. It helps you to understand how it's about to compete, to fight for a place, to not just someone your same age, someone is 35 and is not quick, but he knows how to win the game. All those experience share in a team, I think, helps to make better players.
Yeah. Louis, you were at a great club in Manchester United, always had a history of bringing through young players. You probably crossed paths with Ravel Morrison when he was young and he was sort of coming through. What did you make of the young players there? Because they've always had this tradition, but Ravel obviously has had his issues, but technically he was a terrific player.
Yeah, he was a terrific player. There are plenty of them, but as Genka mentioned, it's really hard because the setup of the Premier League, the wealth, you know, the money itself is really disruptive for them to realize that they have to challenge themselves. You know, they have to maybe go abroad, maybe try to find a way to really go through that process where they're not keeping themselves in their comfort zone. You know, it's like it's kind of too easy because the money is there. You know, it's like obviously the challenge is there, the stadiums, you know, all that. But yes, or it could be the process of going to a B team, as you just mentioned, or going to a process of going abroad and see how competitive it is in France or on those kind of leagues. You know, you will find out that they are working maybe two times a day, maybe pretty much like three times a week, and you end up like going like in a process with a tactical awareness is different, maybe technically they're different, but you learn. You're in a process where you get the feedback, and when you come back with that kind of experience, it's really beneficial for your country. You know, basically all that kind of youth with all that information is very beneficial. But you come to a situation where the money, the actual wealth of all those clubs, is really hard for them. You know, because if the one is decent, the price is three, four times higher than the French guy. Who's going to take the risk? Or it's harder, you know. It's really, really, really challenging for the EFL or the Premier League to address that and push forward the huge process. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm sure we got some questions. We've probably got about 5-10 minutes for questions. Do we have any microphones floating around? Any questions? Just stick your hand up. I can just about see. Any questions for the panelists from over there?
Thank you. You said in your presentation that Monaco sold more than 160 million and that was the biggest in history. Is that a very smart move? Is that a deliberate move by Monaco? Or is that just an accident this year?
You should ask the Russian owners, but I would say that it's a combination of necessity and the fact that they have to deliver with financial fair play. So there was Monaco has a big difficulty to generate relevant income other than player sales. The league is not that strong internationally. The stadium is not putting together 50,000 fans every weekend, so it's more difficult also to generate revenue from sponsorship and other activities. So I think there's for the last 3 years there's been a change of model in Monaco. So all of a sudden the investors from Russia arrived and started to invest money until they were stuck in the fact that they could not invest anymore because they would be generating losses that would not fulfill financial fair play. So I don't think it's an accident. I think it's going to continue to happen, and they will try to keep on coming up with good players in their scheme for them to, or in the scheme or brought from other places, such as last year James Rodriguez, and then be from the income try to buy new players because they've been also very active purchasing players. I think it was around 80 million that they spent.
Yes, we got a microphone down here, please.
Hi, my question is mainly related to the David De Gea fiasco. So there's a lot of blame going over to Madrid and Manchester United, but is the agent to blame at some level? Because this is mainly stemming from my reading of Zlatan Ibrahimovic's autobiography, where he speaks about how Mino Raiola kind of, you know, when he had to make the switch to Barcelona, he played it coy for a long time, got Barcelona interested, as opposed to what seems to have happened here where, you know, De Gea has gone in and said, I want to be a Madrid player, much before the window even opened. So probably that delayed Madrid's bid to begin with, because that seemed to come in, you know, on the last day. So is the agent responsible at some level?
Good question. guys go.
For as much as I know, what happened is the clubs didn't present the papers on time in La Liga. So in this particular case, it's not the agent. Could the agent could have done something earlier? That's probably another question. And yes, could have done it? I would have think so, because I think everyone knew that De Gea was leaving or wanting to leave Manu, and Madrid was wanting to buy him. So could have been done earlier, yes. In the terms that it was done, and what it failed is nothing to do with, I don't think it had anything to do with the agent.
Yes, David.
Yeah, if I can add to that, also because of being an agent, there's a time in which you agree that, I mean, I don't know in this particular case, but there's a time, so first of all, the agent has two works here. One is negotiating the terms for the player, and not always, but sometimes doing an intermediary role in terms of both teams. I think this intermediary role happens more when it's teams from very different cultures or places. Like, you know, it's a Russian team with Manchester United. The agent does the negotiation on behalf of the Russian team. In this particular case, I would say that what the agent has done is agreed terms for the player, and then wait and see because the clubs were talking direct. And wait, I mean, we did a similar deal in our company, taking Lucas Silva to Marseille. So there was a time in which everything was agreed, and our job in this particular case was to ask both sides whether they had an agreement. So I wouldn't blame the agent in this case.
We're in Manchester, the home of Fergie time. We've hit 45 minutes, but I think we can just stray in. Disco.
Given your valuation of Martial at, I think, 16 million euros, you said, why, with your expertise and knowledge of the market, did Manchester United end up paying three times that amount and possibly four or five times that figure with the add-ons involved in the deal?
I guess you should ask them.
I should do.
I really don't know. Obviously, I would say this is a name that would come up top in any scouter list of any top club. But on the other side, you would not say like you're competing with three other clubs and that means that you have to overpay the others. So probably it has to do with a sort of last minute or last day of the market attempt, but I really don't know. And again, I may get proven wrong over time if he delivers great, and I will be told, you said it was only 16 million, right? But that's what on paper we thought it was value. Why they paid more than that, I just don't know. I mean, we were trying to look at the evaluation we did from those players in that list, the top 20, because we realized that in most cases we fell short. So John Stones, the numbers being discussed were far higher than the ones that we put in the list. So it has to do with the market situation. But in this particular case, I guess we should ask them.
It is linked to the Premier League in any way, because straight away when you speak about the Premier League, maybe the price starting to raise for no matter reason, because obviously when they talk about the TV rights, they say, oh, it's possible, you know, so why not asking then?
There's an inflation, I would say. Yeah. I mean, if the very same player is wanted by a Spanish team or a German team, probably they would end up paying less.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Can I just ask the two ex-players, Gaisco and Luis, does the player ever think about the price when you go and play? Is there pressure?
No, I don't think so. But when the press is starting to put you on papers every weekend and saying, oh yes, you didn't perform because of this, and the price tag is coming out every time, yes, it starts to upset you, because maybe the fans is going as well, and then you start to question yourself, you know. But I think it's more or less being a professional is all about being focused, you know. It's the ball is running, I want to score, that's it. I'm not like gonna fuss about what people say. It's obviously something that affects people, but it depends on the personality. But I don't think I ever think that someone is going to a game and think my price tag is no.
Yeah, I think like Luis was saying earlier, it's wrongly assumed because it's all the time of the price, the tag price. So because it's cost so much more, so many millions, it has to score so many goals. I think that's completely wrong.
Yeah.
And sometimes there is players that can feel that pressure. In my case, I never felt it. it was more like a motivation, knowing that someone trusted me and could pay that money, and it was to come and deliver. Sometimes happens, sometimes it doesn't happen. It's, I think, a very individual case should be looked at in a different way, because injuries, adaptation, the club, the confidence, so many things involved in a big movement like this transfer what happens. But no particular in the case, I never thought, because I've cost so many millions, I have to score more goals that I never did.
But did you play with anyone who the weight of the transfer fee was weighed on them?
No, a teammate that it cost, and I heard him saying something like, you know, I've seen players that they felt the pressure, yes, but not just because of the money, pressure from the media, from the fans, from maybe sometimes the coach, he puts too much pressure on a player because he has to demand or expect a lot from him and crumble down. This happens. Yeah.
Can I just ask the two of you, finally, will Martial be a success at Manchester United?
I'm convinced, yeah. I'm convinced, but the perception of the transfer, you know, the amount of money made, the polemic, that's for sure. But he will perform because he's got the quality that Manchester United needed. So I'm very confident. I think I see in your statistic you put Fellini as a failure. I'm not happy about that.
It's numbers. No, it's numbers.
Yeah, I don't call care.
call it disappointment, but based on what was paid,
I see what you mean, to have
much more participation. Yeah, the word sometimes.
Yeah. But it's more about the perception. Yeah, people will say, oh, yes, because of the 36 million, he should score 30 goals. No, it doesn't work like this. It's not science. Football is more about feeling and how he interacts with the other players.
So was Di Maria a failure then?
I think so, yes, because he left after 6 months. I think a lot of expectation. Such a great player, won the Champions League the year before. Yes, I was expecting a lot more. The transfer, you know, I don't remember any transfer that I and someone leave. No. So, yes, for me, I was really disappointed.
And, guys, if I can ask you about De Gea, he leaves next summer?
Well, it seems like he's going to sign a new contract, or he's going to be offered a new contract, and that's going to be a turning point, I guess.
Yeah. Right, final question for Esteban, who's done this SoccerX transfer review. In a year's time, what percentage? It's gone up 14% in the Premier League. What do you think it will go up to next year with the new TV money?
Is this being recorded?
I hope so.
I would say about the same, 15, around 15-20% growth. At least.
Very good. Thank you very much for listening and for your questions. If I can just thank Esteve, Gaiska and Louis for their intelligent knowledge. Thank you.